This message is brought to you by 12 Stone Church. Pastor Kevin Myers delivers the teaching entitled, Avoid the Use of Debt. This is the second message in the series, Mastering Your Money. We hope this serves you well. Please enjoy.
So welcome to 12 Stone and a life-changing dare. We dare you to master your money. And this is no casual investment or casual invitation. We as a church have invested in Master Your Money by Ron Blue, who is our financial advisor for this four-week series. And we have arranged with Ron, with the publisher, a unique edition for 12 Stone of this book, Master Your Money, 30th Anniversary Updated. If you were with us last weekend, you received a copy of this as a gift. If you missed out on last weekend, we made sure we bought enough so that you'd be able to have one today as a part of the series. So on the way out, you can pick yours up. Because we're all trying to figure out, how do you get to the next level? How do you get to the next step? And Ron is coming alongside us, not only through his book, but in conversation. And Ron reminded us that we're all at different stages. You might remember from last weekend's conversation that Ron described at least five different places we may find ourselves, as this is summarized in your notes. Sometimes we find ourselves at the struggling, and that may be where you identify yourself. You say, man, in my personal finances right now, I'm right here at struggling. And everybody wants to know how to get to the next step. But if you're struggling, that's where you can't make ends meet. And that's where you're just in a rough place. Kind of like where Marcia and I, as we mentioned, when we got married, we had a major debt and minor income jobs. And it was just tough to make ends meet. And that's not a fun place to live. But you're trying to figure out, how do you go from struggling to surviving? How do you get to the next step? And well, the next step is surviving. And that means maybe you are making ends meet, but it's pretty tough. And it's week to week and paycheck to paycheck. And you're not finding margin. You're not figuring out how to get yourself from a place where you can even get beyond. But you want to. You want to go from surviving to stable. Maybe stable where you're removing consumer kinds of debt and you're putting some money away for yourself and working toward the future. But you really want to know, how do I get from stable to secure? And maybe secure is where you've really put most of the debt behind you, and you're working against your mortgage debt, and you got money working for you. You're just really in a better place, and you can make major purchases on cash. And then you'd like to know, how do I go from secure to surplus? And some are living at the surplus level. And even Ron said in the conversation, at some point you got to say, man, when's enough enough? And how do you leverage, maybe even go to the next level significant? So the question was, where are you right now? But wherever you are, you're asking, how do I go to the next step? And Ron offered us five biblical financial principles. They're right there in your teaching notes. This is the outline for our series. So listen in again as Ron summarizes those principles. See if you can get them right down in your teaching notes right on the back of your bulletin. Here they are. Ron, among your many discoveries, one of them that I read is there are five biblical financial principles. Tell us what those are and talk a little bit about those.
Well, the interesting thing was, is sometimes you don't know what you know. And I was testifying before a congressional subcommittee in the early 90s. Senator Dodd from Connecticut was doing the interviewing. And his question was, what would you tell the American family about their money? And right off the top of my head, I thought, what I'm going to tell him is going to make him laugh. So I said, Senator, I would tell them to spend less than they earn, avoid the use of debt, build some margin into their finances, and set long-term goals so that they could prioritize their money between the short-term and the long-term. And I stopped at those four and looked up, and Senator picked up his pencil, and he wrote them down, and he repeated them back to me. And then he said, well, it seems to me that that'd work at any income level. And I said, you're right, Senator, including the United States government. And we had a great conversation. We had a great conversation on that. But those four principles, when you add to it, give generously, are five biblical principles of money management and the illustration of the guy. It works for the government. It works for the single mom. It works for the billionaire. It works in Africa. It works in Japan. Those are like biblical principles. Those are transcendent principles. Live within your income, avoid debt, save, set long-term goals, and give generously. And they're never going to change. They're always going to be relevant, and they're always going to work.
And so those five biblical financial principles work to help you move from one step to the next step. How do you get to the next step? Apply these five principles. Let me make sure you got them down in your notes. Number one, spend less. Spend what? Less than you earn. Number two, avoid. Say it with me. Do what? Avoid. One more time. Say that. Do what? Avoid the use of debt. Number three, build margin. In other words, save. Build margin. In other words, do what, church? Save. Number four, set long-term goals. Number five, give generously. And what Ron is helping us understand is these five biblical financial principles will help you get to the next step no matter what level you're on and where you're going. So last week we spent time with this spend less than you earn. And these five are our guiding outline for the 4 weeks. It's why you want to be in on 4 weeks. And even if you missed last weekend, then get online, get in on this, read the book, and apply the principles so that you can master your money. That is the dare, and you win. It's your financial future. So let's tap into a couple of his next thoughts. Number two, avoid the use of debt. Number three, build margin that is safe. Let's try and unpack those thoughts today. So if you're following along in your notes, you already perhaps took a moment to fill in the blank. Avoid the use of debt, build margin. Let's talk about avoid the use of debt. Have you ever noticed how you become a creature of your culture? In other words, you drink the Kool-Aid of whatever culture you're in, and therefore it becomes normal for you. In fact, it's only years later when you look back that you can see when something was a dumb decision. You're like, man, why did I do that? But in the moment, it was so normal that you just joined everybody. For example, take a look at this photo. This is a picture of me with my mother back in the late 70s. That is a full-on Saturday Night Fever look with the fro. Oh, yeah. And I want you to know, back in the day, that was cool. But when I look at it today, like all my family, they just laugh. And what was I thinking? Because when you drink the Kool-Aid in your culture, you're such a creature of your culture, it feels normal. And only when you look back on it, do you think, man, that was dumb. What are we doing in our current culture that seems normal, but when we look back on it, it's going to be dumb? I can tell you one of those things is debt without discussion. We are a debt-driven culture, and a day will come when we figure out how foolish that really is. Listen into this conversation with Ron as he unpacks some of these thoughts.
So why do I need to spend less than I make in a world that lets me spend more than I make?
Well, yeah, we have redefined being able to afford it. Now, being able to afford it means I can make the credit card payments. And again, I've lived long enough and I've seen us become a debt-driven society. I mean, look at our government as an example. And people, I mean, where do you go that they don't offer you a credit card so that you get a 10% discount on this particular purchase and now they've got you? And so there's no real encouragement to not overspend. I mean, I need it, you know, so, and it's so easy. So it becomes, I really think also that people need accountability in order to hang in there on a lot of this. It's hard to do it by yourself.
It is. It's even hard to do it by yourself if you're, as a couple, you agree. Even as husband and wife, if you agree, it's still pretty tough.
It is, but it's worth it.
We all need encouragement. We all need help to rise above, to go counterculture in a debt-driven society that makes it just normal. Just don't even worry about it. We don't even stop to think about it. We don't look at the weight and the risk and the cost of debt, and we'll do it for just about anything because our culture has redefined what it means to afford something. You heard Ron talk about that. That now we say, oh, I can afford that, meaning I can afford the credit card payment. And what we're not paying attention to what we're doing because no longer do I greed something, I just need something, right? I mean, that's how I jotted down in my notes. If you want to write this down, here you go. The problem with greed is that it masks its need. The problem with greed is that it masks its need. We take the GR in greed and we put an N in front of it, and pretty soon in our own language, it's not I greed that, it's I need that. And once you say I need that, well, then it's justified. However, whatever it takes to get it. Quick debt, no worries, just run the car, doesn't matter, I'll figure it out later. And I'm capable of greed. St. Francis of Assisi reportedly said that men, that is humanity, men have confessed every known sin to me except the sin of greed. Meaning you can't see it in yourself. So let's just get over it right now. Let's just do our little confession. I'll raise my hand. I'm capable of greed. Anyone else willing to own that? Look at your neighbor who's not putting their hand up. Help them. They're delusional. We're all capable of it. Because we go to the mall and we get online, and every screen that we have, including mobile screen, is telling us, well, you got to have that. You need that. And more than that, we get to see on Instagram and otherwise through social media. See, we not only have our neighbor to look at and see what they have that we don't have, but we got Instagram and we got every social media outlet showing us what everybody has that we don't have. It's in our face all the time. And you don't even have to leave the house. You can do online shopping. It's spectacular. You just swipe the card. You don't have to swipe the card. Just push the button. They'll send it to you. And that emerging generation sees on Instagram a Taylor Swift or a Kendall Jenner, and they see the lifestyle, and it's like, I got to have that lifestyle. And it can go so far in this culture that you end up with stories like the 17-year-old Chinese teenager who literally sold one of his kidneys, black market, went under the knife just to buy an Apple iPad. And he told his mom when she said, what happened to you? He said, well, I just, and black market. He said, I went and did that because I needed an iPad. And you may hear that and say, well, that's absurd. But what are we all doing? That we're going to look back at the picture of our decisions and say, man, that was dumb. You see, God has a lot to say about money. The Bible talks more about money than faith and prayer combined. Do you know that? Because your faith is expressed and authenticated in the way you earn, spend, manage, give, hold money. The way you feel about money is a direct expression of your faith. Jesus was very clear in one of his many conversations in Luke chapter 12. Take your Bibles across the campus. If you don't already have one, pull it up from under your seat, or maybe you picked one up walking in. And here we go. We're over in Luke chapter 12, page 1043. If you're in a worship center Bible, if you're on a mobile device, it's Luke chapter 12. If you got your own Bible with you, it's Luke chapter 12. And we're going to start reading at verse 13. We're going to read a couple verses to get to the point, but the whole context is fascinating because on page 1043, chapter 12, verse 1 starts, and again, while we're not going to read, I'll give you context. Jesus is talking to thousands of people. Massive crowd is gathered. And Jesus has the crowd in front of him, and you know what he's teaching? He's teaching, listen, be on guard. Know this, that you get so wrapped in the things in the material world and your physical body that you're afraid of what can take your physical body, your physical life, but you need to focus on eternal, your soul. Your soul lives forever. Live for larger things than a material world. While he's having the conversation, a guy kind of raises his hand and interrupts Jesus because things are on his mind. Verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Now, this is fascinating. Because why would you interrupt Jesus and say, you know what, I got a good idea for you. Well, what he's saying is this. As he hears Jesus talk about don't be so materialistic, he thinks my brother needs to hear that. Isn't that what happens to most of us? As soon as we hear this teacher, oh, I know somebody who needs to be. Are they here? Where are they? Oh, I got sent. You need to be here. Because we're so much better in seeing greed in others than ourselves, aren't we? It's a gift. Well, they got, my brother needs to hear it. So isn't it comical that while Jesus is saying, don't be bent on materialism, a guy raised his hand and says, hey, that's my brother. Tell him to share the inheritance. Because most likely he's a younger brother. The older brother got the lion's share of the inheritance and he wants more. It's not that the guy was starving when he said that. It's just that my brother's got more and I want more. And here's a chance for Jesus to have an interesting conversation. And here's how he handles it. Jesus replied, verse 14, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbitrator between you? Then he said to them, meaning to the whole crowd, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. All kinds of what? And here's the line. Underline it, highlight it, memorize it, learn it, fight for it. Jesus says, life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And we live in a culture where it does. Life consists in the abundance of your possessions. Your life is according to your stuff. And it's interesting, it's still true, and Jesus was talking about it back then. And if we're going to follow Jesus, we got to agree with Jesus. We got to recognize that our life does not consist in the abundance of our stuff, but we all get caught in it. We're all at risk. And since Jesus had the opportunity in the moment to say to the guy, the older son who got most of the inheritance, now you need to take what you have and divvy it up so that your younger brother has a fair share. He didn't bother to do that. He said, listen, y'all got to deal with greed. And when the question of greed comes to us, our response is, well, if I can't have it, somebody won't divvy it up and give it to me, then I'll just debt my way into it. I'm going to get it. Ron Blue talks about some of these, what he would call dangers of debt. It's why when you get this book in chapter 5, you'll want to go through this and pay attention. He talks about the financial topic of debt being clouded with emotion and misunderstanding and poor teaching. And so before starting this chapter, he says we need to have a clear understanding of debt. And he says, debt is not a sin. The Bible discourages the use of debt, but it does not prohibit it. Then he says, debt is never the real problem. It is only symptomatic of a real problem. Greed, self-indulgence, impatience, fear, poor self-image, lack of self-worth, lack of self-discipline, lack of faith, and perhaps many other things. Those things where you're trying to fill a God-shaped void through material things. Those are underneath it. Pay attention because there's dangers here. And debt can be defined in many ways. He goes on to write, I define it as any money owed to anyone for anything. And then he describes there are many different kinds of debt, like credit card debt, consumer debt, mortgage debt, investment debt, business debt. And then he goes into the dangers. It's why you want this book. It's why you want to go through this. You don't want to just put it on the shelf and collect dust. And he unpacks for us one of the real dangers. Because debt has the reverse impact than we intended. See, we're all trying to figure out how to raise our standard of living. And Ron talks about what does debt actually do? Things like consumer debt, credit card debt. Listen in on this conversation. It's insightful.
You made a statement that I thought was intriguing, that people often use debt to increase their standard of living when in fact it can actually lower your standard of living.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
I can, because let's say that I run up a credit card bill or car debt or something of $5,000, and now I'm paying interest of some amount on that. And what happens is that because I borrowed the money, I didn't have the income, but I have to pay it back with my income. And I have to pay it back with after giving dollars and after tax dollars and after interest dollars. So I have to pay back more than what I got. And it's all with after-tax dollars. So I have to lower my standard of living in the future by borrowing in the present. You know, it says, well, I have it, yeah, but it's cost you a lot in the future. You have mortgaged the future, and it's cost you more in the future than if you had waited, saved the money, and paid for it.
See, when Ron said that, it was arresting. It's arresting for us to recognize that we become not only a debt-driven society, but we're trying to raise our standard of living, and the impact is actually lowering our standard of living. I'm going to make sure you get this. Let me take us to this, how do you get to the next step question. Here's the point. You can't borrow your way to the next step. And we live in a culture that says you can. You can't borrow your way to the next step. And from government to business to personal lives, we're thinking that might be possible. And what Ron's helping us understand is, if you borrow yourself to the next level, what actually happens is instead of going forward, you go backward. And if you don't conquer lies, lies will conquer you. In fact, in the rest of Ron's conversation, there are three things that I think he helped us understand we need to protect. So I'm going to jot these down on the whiteboard. They're nowhere in your notes. If you want to, you can just take in the empty space there in your notes. You can jot these down. Three things that I think Ron's going to help us understand that you have to protect. Let me see if this makes a little bit of sense to you. First, you have to protect from impulse. You have to protect from what? Impulse. Second, protect from impatience. Jot it down. You have to protect from what? Impatience. And third, protect your savings. Protect your what? Let's talk about these one at a time, and I think it'll make sense. Protect from impulse. Listen to what Ron had to say.
Everybody hates doing a budget. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody hates doing a budget. Mm-hmm. What do you say to people? How do you advise people to get into budgeting and living inside a budget? Because spending less than you make is impossible without a budget. Agreed?
Budgeting needs to be done because I need to do it in order to accomplish my goals, not just because it's a discipline. It'll become a habit to you. And if you plan and manage your money, and a budget's just a guide anyway. It's a bunch of pre-made decisions. And once the habits are established, you don't need to do much more with the budget. It's more to get control of where you're spending your money first.
So how do you get control of how you spend your money? You set a budget. What is a budget? It's a bunch of pre-made decisions. It's a bunch of what kind of decisions? Pre-made decisions. See, you have to conquer impulse with pre-made decisions. Do you get this? See, life is not a spending buffet. You're going to have to pre-make decisions before you get to all the options, or they will tempt you right into bankruptcy. That's his whole point. Isn't that true physically? Those of us who are going after trying to get more in shape, if you will. Those of us who are trying to win this over these 3 months, all the way to April 30th, which, by the way, April 30th is the 5K run. And if you haven't already signed up, literally hundreds, actually we're in the thousands now, of people have signed up. Make sure you get in on that, 12stone.com/5K. And if you want to be a part of that, get in, sign up. At some point, I know we're going to have to close it, but this will be fun. But here's what I know. While I'm in this effort, I can't go to buffets. Do you know what I'm talking about? Because I have to pre-decide what I'm going to eat, because if I wait till I get there, I'm going to want to eat. That's why I can't go to a buffet. A buffet messes you up. And Jerry Seinfeld, in about 1 minute of one of his stand-ups, helps us understand what happens when we go to buffets. It just makes me smile listening.
What is it about the buffet? It does fascinate me. There's something about it that breaks down the mind, reason, judgment, portion, sizes, combinations. Nobody would go into a restaurant and say to the waiter, I want a yogurt parfait, spare ribs, a waffle, 4 cookies, and an egg white omelet. People build these death row last meal wish lists. It's like a working model of all their emotional issues and personal needs. And then they can't decide when they're done, so they just start spinning like a robot vacuum. With kale chips, maple bacon. They bump into the wall, muffin, 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 muffin. They start accosting strangers. Excuse me, where did you get that? What is that? I didn't see that. That's a caramelized chicken leg. I gotta try that. Give me yours. You know where they are. You can get more. Come on!
Oh, that's so funny. Did you catch this line? The buffet breaks down the mind, reason, and judgment. That's what happens financially. We have so many options in this world. We treat the world like it's a spending buffet. and we lose all reason, all judgment. When you put no limits and you pretend life is a spending buffet, you will bulge until you bankrupt. You will enslave yourself financially. That's why Proverbs 22:7 is so helpful to us. Look on the screen. The poor are always ruled over by the rich, so don't borrow and put yourself under their power. You have choices to make. Don't make those kinds of choices. So I have a couple questions here. What spending impulses are conquering you? And what's taking you into debt that can be avoided? And that's where budget helps. Budget is a bunch of pre-made decisions. For example, in the most simplistic but practical way, we have in our family a goal that we pursue. And our budget looks like what you might have heard many times, and it's really valuable, easy to say, hard to do, is 10-10-80. And by 10-10-80, I simply mean 10%, the first 10% goes to God because God's first. That's our tie that just recognizes God's the giver and the owner of everything. And we fight for the second 10% to be saved at whatever income level. Fight for this. And the third is the 80%, and this is your lifestyle. And you immediately know what kind of lifestyle you can live because you know what your income is. You can honor God. You put away and save for your future so that you have some finances working for you. And then you live off, and this is lifestyle. Then now you deal with, okay, what are my taxes and what's housing and what's food and what's clothing and everything I want. And in a world of a buffet, I live inside this. And if you don't, then this is going to rise above. And the 80% is going to want to consume your savings. And that's going to want to consume your honor God. And somewhere until eventually you're living on 110% or you're living on 130%. And eventually you enslave and bankrupt yourself. So you're going to have to draw a line. In other words, you're going to have to not only protect from impulse, but you're going to have to protect from impatience because you can't have everything right away. Listen to what Ron Blue had to say.
So Ron, a 28-year-old man, 27-year-old woman, married for 3 years, come to you. They've saved a few thousand dollars and they want to buy a home. They hope to get pregnant, start a family. And it would be an unusual situation if somebody had accumulated $100,000, $150,000 all on their own since college, let alone potential college debt. And they come to you for advice and say, we want to borrow money for a mortgage against the home. How do you counsel them?
Well, I would counsel them to I would not counsel against taking on a mortgage. Because when you buy a home, you're buying a lifestyle. And so it's a non-economic transaction to some extent. It has economic consequences, but you're buying something other than the house. So my counsel to them would be make sure that you've saved enough down payment so that you can stand the risk of downturns. So I would never counsel somebody to probably buy a home without putting less than maybe 20% as their down payment. So it's called delayed gratification. You may not be able to have it today, but if you plan for it, you're going to have to not spend in the current to have it in the future. That means that's why it's spend less.
Say that one more time.
You're going to have to not spend it today to have it in the future. So if you want a down payment on a home, you've got to not spend it today. It's not economically foolish necessarily to rent while you're doing this at all. If you follow those principles, spend less than you earn, avoid the use of debt, and build some liquidity, and set long-term goals, and give generously, it will work itself out.
So how do you protect from impatience? You have to practice. You have to conquer with delayed gratification. With what, church? Delayed gratification. That means you're going to have to not spend in the current. You hear what Ron said? Not spend in the current in order to have it in the future. And this doesn't require a lot of teaching or discussion. It just requires action. You just have to fight for this. So I put some questions. Where are you pretending that you can get ahead without practicing delayed gratification? Where do you need to wait? Hey, we want that. Okay, then wait while you work your way there. Until you can afford it. protect from impulse, protect from impatience, and then protect your savings. Listen to what Ron has to say. This is insightful.
You didn't seem to have a problem, Ron, in the book with the idea of getting rich. But in a get-rich-quick world, you suggested get rich slow.
That's right. Get rich
slow. Explain
that. Well, you know, the only way to get rich quick is to be really lucky or to be born into the right family. And most people have to work for a living. So if they live within their income and they do that for a long time, they're going to come out way ahead. I said, look, if you don't spend $83 a month that you could spend and just put it away when you get out of college, let's say, or school, high school, and you do that for a working life, you're going to have saved $40,000 or $50,000, okay? However, because of the laws of compounding, that could be worth hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million. I can save, it used to be I could save $40,000 and under the interest rates, I could have $1 million when I was 65. Today, I might have $300,000 or $400,000 if interest rates don't change. So I save $40,000 to have $300,000 or $400,000. Or on the other side, I overspend by $83 a month. It didn't cost me $40,000 over a working life. It cost me what it could have earned, $300,000, $400,000 or whatever. So a little bit over a long time frame works, and you'll end up just fine.
That is such helpful advice. A little bit over a long period of time, and you'll be just fine. In a culture that says, get it all now. No wonder this is contrary. No wonder it's difficult to win in this culture, in a world where everybody wants to get it when? Now. Get it when? Now. And get it how fast? Really fast. Not slow. So plain, so simple, so clear. You immediately know what to do. If you want to master your money, you're going to have to protect your savings, which means you're going to have to be vigilant. It means back here, you're going to have to draw a line. And if you don't draw a line, you say, well, I'm not going to draw lines. Eventually, you'll pass your savings, pass honoring God, and you'll end up here enslaving your, but a line will be drawn for you. So draw the line where you win. And this is not a casual protect, or you're not going to have a financial future. So it's not casual. It's more like when I say protect your savings, I mean you're going to have to be vigilant over it like you protect the ones you love. Or everything's going to eat it away. So I've been trying, sometimes in series like this, I'll try and tell the best classic stories of 12 Stone because it's just fun to catch everybody up, everybody who's new and checked us out and hanging out. And so let me give you another one of the classic stories. I have four children, among whom I have one daughter. And so it's always daddy's job to protect his daughter. Now she's since married, and so that's not my primary job anymore. But however, when she was in middle school, that was my job. And when Julissa, my daughter, was in middle school, there was a season of time when she's on the bus, and there were a couple of boys that were just teasing and demeaning her, and her otherwise bright personality was dimming, and everything we tried was fruitless. And so daddy did, and if you've heard this story, you know I could tell this story every week because I just love the story. It was daddy's turn to protect and free up her future. So most of you know that I love motorcycling. And so I put on all my leathers, and I got on my motorcycle, and I rode to the home of these two boys. And I waited until the bus showed up. Oh, I sat out in front of their house and I barked the bike so that the neighbors would notice, particularly at the house. And you could see people looking down between their blinds like, who's the Hell's Angels guy out front? And I kicked my feet up on the bike until the bus dropped the two boys off and they walked up and, of course, they're paying attention. And I hopped off the bike and I start walking to the door as they walk to the door. And then mom comes out the front door and you can just imagine that look on her face. Can I help you, sir? And I said, yes, you can. My name is Kevin Myers. Now, this is the moment when you pray she does not go to 12 stone, okay? You just, of all the people I don't want at 12 stone, that's one. Thank God, apparently they didn't. So I said, my name is Kevin Myers, and I have a daughter named Julissa. She's on the middle school bus with your boys, and they're bullying her, and I've come here to end it. This just needs to stop. She said, those are not my boys. They're my husband's. And she turned around and walked in the house. A few moments later, the door opens and Dad's coming out. Of course, I'm praying, dear God, don't let this guy be 6'5", right? I mean, of all the things I can handle, that isn't one of them. And the guy walks out, and he's probably an inch shorter than me. And I'm like, I think I can handle this. Thank you, Jesus. He said, may I help you, sir? Yes, Kim. My name's Kevin Myers. I have a daughter. Her name is Julissa. She's on the bus with your two boys, and they're bullying her. And I want it to end. We looked at his boys. He said, boys, do you know Julissa? They said, I don't know what he's talking about. We don't even know Julissa. He looks at me. It's them. Looks back at his boys. He says, boys, I don't want you to look at Julissa, talk to Julissa, breathe around Julissa, and I never want this man on my lawn again. He looks at me. Is that good enough for you? I says, it is if it takes. He says, oh, it'll take. I said, good enough. I walked back to my bike. Lit it. Drove away. I could hear faintly echoing in the wind. Do, 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 do. I could hear bad to the bone. And everything changed for her. Well, what I'm saying is, when I say protect your savings, I mean you're going to have to be vigilant, because everything in this world will drive you to spend every last penny of every paycheck until after every week, every month, every year, you have nothing for all your efforts. And it's not going to be easy. It isn't easy for anybody. So protect it so you have a future. And that may mean for some of you, you're like, man, I know this is right. I got to fight. And I don't know how to fight for this. You know what? I can't do 10%. I can't. Maybe I'll start at 8. I can't do 8. Maybe I'll start at 5. I can't do 5. I'll start at 2. But draw a line. Stop taking on unnecessary debt. And start paying down your credit card debt, your consumer debt. Start working against the debt. That may mean that you take in your saving and you figure out, okay, we're going to start saving 2, 5, whatever percent we're going to start fighting and put it in the bank until we have a margin of $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000, whatever you need. And that becomes our weeds fund. We need margin because stuff happens in life. It costs more than it needs. And just, okay, we have to use that money. And now we start using the money that we would put in savings. And in order to get ahead, we start putting that money against our debt. And so you may be making your minimum debt payment on credit card or consumer, but you start taking that past margin money, what you would be putting in the bank for savings, and you start putting it on top of that debt payment until you eliminate the smallest debt. And then you keep making those payments until you've eliminated consumer debt, until really the 10% you're putting away is actually your money. And it's slow. Because that's how you build any kind of stability and wealth. In a world that lies and tells you can do this all fast, you cannot. When Ron Blue says, page 59 of his book, and you're going to get this book, you want to read it. He's talking about the danger of debt. And he says, the danger of debt is that it becomes a trap. Getting in takes no effort, but getting out can feel impossible because it's slow. Settle in for the slow. Because the only way most of us become okay financially is slow over a long period of time. And it's worth it. Great insight. Get rich slow. So there you have it. Things to protect. Avoid the use of debt. Be responsible with that. Make margin. And so now let me give a wrapping thought. Life is not all about money, and I'm not pretending that it is in this series. But we all need money. Money is a practical part of life, and God knows that. God put us in a material world. And we're not alone in this journey. And some churches, they talk about money as if money is your source of happiness and the very evidence of being holy, that God is with you. And other churches, they hardly talk about money. And when they do, they celebrate being poor, and they act as if being poor is holy, and that's the sign that God is with you. And here, together, we don't believe either one is true. I don't believe being rich is a sign of being holy and God with you, and being poor is a sign of being holy and God's with you. Well, we believe God is holy, and through Jesus, God makes us holy, and that God walks with us, and that we have people at all different levels. Literally, when you look at this, kind of stair step. We have people at 12 Stone who are struggling. People are surviving. People are stable. Some people are secure. People have surplus. We have people at all levels, top, bottom, and in between. And you don't have to apologize around here if you're wealthy and God's helping you and you're using the principles and maybe you start out a better, and you don't have to apologize if you're struggling in the middle or all the way down to the bottom. And I tell stories that are true, that I come from a pretty messed up family who didn't understand money. We didn't understand the things we're teaching right here. So when they drop out of high school and get married and have kids and eventually divorce, they're going to stay on the struggling end. And we grew up and I was called white trash. We moved in and out of 9 different rental properties through my early years into high school. Mom never owned a home. I had a skewed view. I didn't understand money. We struggled when we got married. It took a while to figure it out. I tell you the stories that we started surviving and doing better, but when we planted 12 Stone, we kind of lost everything and went back. Those stories are all true. We struggled in those days. I don't struggle today at the same level I did then. I'm not pretending that I do when I tell those stories. I'm saying I get it. I understand the cycle. But we've been practicing these principles and trying to move up the steps, and so are you. And the only way you move up the steps is by applying the principles of God. These 5 biblical financial principles need to be not inspiring, but embraced and practiced. And to know that you're not on your own when you do this. God's in the financial arena of your life. It's spiritual. And when we talked in last series, Double Dog Dare from Romans chapter 8, And we encourage you, nothing can separate you from the love of God. And he has made us more than conquerors. More than what, church? Conquerors. That's still true. So you conquer the things that are lies in this world, or they will conquer you. So if you didn't get a copy of Master Your Money from Ron Blue last weekend, pick one up on the way out. Everybody stay in this series all 4 weeks. Pay attention. Apply. Practice. Watch God change you. And we want to pray this truth into our lives. And if you're wondering, man, I don't know how to win delayed gratification. I don't know how to be motivated to win that. Well, then that's why you want to be here next week, because we're going to pick up on that. Ron Blue helps us. So I'm going to turn the service over to the campus pastors for now. And we want to pray over you, to pray these principles over your life and to pray these truths into your life. So let us bow our heads together and pray. So, Father, we become even more aware today of really how difficult this world of finances is. These principles are powerful. We know they're true when we hear them. But they are hard to practice. It's hard to put limits on ourselves and budgets instead of living like it's a buffet. It's hard to stop going into casual debt just for consumer reasons. It's difficult to win over impulse. It's difficult to wait and be patient. It's difficult to build strength slowly. God, would you help us? For all who would pray and say, God, I don't want to do this on my own. And you say, well, you don't have to. God, would you give us strength? And would you help us encourage one another? Would you help us as a church wrestle against the materialism of this world? Would you help us go counter to culture? Would you help us practice, Lord Jesus, what you taught, that life does not consist in the abundance of our stuff? And would you take this right to the practical level? Would you let the anointing on Ron's teaching cover over our lives? Would you help us as people, as families, as couples, as emerging next generation? Would you help us apply these principles and live them out, God, so that we can actually have a freed up future? So I don't know what conversations need to transpire, but I pray for courage on our part. Keep us in this series, because these are sometimes the times we just want to run and pretend this isn't true and run away from the burden of living out great wisdom. But God, if we don't, we lose. So I pray you'd help us win. Help us conquer what is conquering us. And let this blessing rest on us, I pray. In Jesus' name, and everyone agreed, saying, amen.